This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, Stephen. Good morning, everybody. This is the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, a two-day meeting which will go by like that in many, many respects. So what I would like us to do is, as we just had Stephen's help getting us on to our phone call, this is a public meeting. So what I would ask is that you make sure you keep your shuffling of your papers to a minimum because it gets picked up. Also ask that you might want to keep your side conversations still at a minimum because they get picked up as well, and it just makes it very difficult for everybody to stay on track. What I would ask that we do to get started here this morning is, why don't we just go around? I think we all know each other, but just to assure ourselves, Mr. Soderlund, you want to start us off?
Kurt Soderlund with the Judicial Council. Paul Maragnani, presiding judge, Santa Cruz.
Elizabeth Johnson, Trinity County presiding judge.
Jody Harmon, San Luis Obispo, presiding judge.
Sean Landry, CEO, Yolo Superior Court.
Rebecca Clark, CEO, Santa Cruz County.
Black of York, Judicial Council.
Lori Rolls, Federal Court Budget Chair.
Kim Turner, CEO in Marin.
Sig Yan, CEO of Sonoma County.
Kurt Child, Judicial Council.
Cynthia Williams, Social Career Court. I just finished my stint as DJ.
Nancy Yamasaki, Court Exec, Santa Clara.
And Jody Patel.
She happens to ask for a phone call.
Okay. Sherry Carter, Court Executive Officer for Los Angeles County.
Marcia Slough, Chair of Trial Court, presiding judges and presiding judge for San Bernardino County. And Judge Smith is also with us, and she's walking in right now from Alameda. So you can tell by the introductions, we have a good combination of PJs and CEOs from the small, medium, and large courts, which I think is important as we try to really evaluate the revenues and expenditures from the IMS fund. So at this point, I think we really want to kind of see some guidelines and principles upon which we're going to follow over the next couple of days so that we can get through this work as efficiently as possible. So, Sherry, do you want to talk about that?
One of the things that we thought was important, when we put these groups together and we each come with our own perspective, it's important for us to realize that we're all dealing with branch funds for branch programs. And so rather than focusing just on our court, we thought it would be better to have principles against which we would measure all of the programs we're talking about so that there isn't going to be a my court, my county, my special program approach, because we have, as you'll soon hear, a $12 million deficit problem. And so we thought it would be helpful if we wrote principles on the board behind us against which we may want to measure some of the programs. And we can add to it as we go through the day if we think other things come up. And so some suggestions might be, how do we integrate the survey results? You know, is that something that we want to talk about now? We could maybe add that after we get to the survey results. But it might be that we say, okay, do we want to integrate it by the value that the courts added on the surveys, the ones that popped to the top? You know, how do we integrate, or do we integrate that as a principle? We might want to talk about, again, from the surveys, we might want to talk about, is this the appropriate place to fund these particular programs? And if it is, okay, and if it is not, where do we think it should be funded from? And do we need to create a phase-off, you know, whether it's a one-year, a two-year, or whatever, if the program has value but it doesn't meet these other criteria and it doesn't belong in IMF, then we might want to talk about how we would phase it off. So we thought that principles might be important for us to talk about. Does that sound like something we should do? So does anyone have a suggestion on what some of the principles should be?
Then we might want someone to... Cheryl, do you mind writing them up on the board so that we can always have them?
I thought here, if that's okay, because then we can always kind of turn around and look at them.
So I really like this approach. This is Kim Turner. I guess I'm state my name, right, because we've got listeners. And I actually went through that exercise yesterday myself. I thought, you know, how are we going to wrap our arms around this huge task, all these different programs, some of which 58 courts, some of which serve just a few courts. And so one of the guiding principles, of course, has to be, are there mandatory programs that have to be funded, whether they're funded out of the IMF or whether they're funded out of the TCPF is, of course, you know, up for debate. But
how would you define mandatory?
Well, so that's interesting because in the workup that was done on each of these programs, that question was asked, and sometimes the answer is very clear. Yes, government code XXX says we have to do this. Sometimes the drafter would say, yes, it's mandatory because, you know, we've decided that this is a good idea, or the Judicial Council back in 1993 said it was a good idea. I don't know if that's quite as strong as an actual statutory or rule of court kind of directive. So,
and I would even propose that statute is more important than even a rule of court.
Exactly, exactly. So I think we have to really kind of look at all of that. In addition to that,
is that our first principle, whether it's statutorily mandated?
Yeah. But I still think we'll have to consider at some point whether it's the appropriate fund.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I agree. I also thought that we should look at the service levels and how many courts are served by a particular program. I also thought that one of the criteria should be looking at, even if these are worthy programs, should they be funded out of let's say the IMF fund, or should courts that use them have to purchase the service in some regard? I don't know exactly how we would do that, but it would be another criteria. And
so hold on, are you okay?
Sorry, I'm getting way ahead of her, I think.
So mandated.
So yeah, I think we're kind of talking statutorily mandated or how mandated, and we'd have to and then the next one was. I think number of courts or
how many courts are being served by a particular program.
Uh-huh. Number of courts. And then
and the service level at which the, you know, program is funded.
What do you mean by that, Kim?
Well, so in some cases, I'll just use a technology project. Part of the V3 courts are funded out of the IMF, part of them are funded out of the TCPF. I think it's hard for someone who isn't a V3 court to kind of understand, well, you know, what's the mix of, and why did we come up with that mix of funding for this particular service? Is there a natural break there, or is it something that was very arbitrary? Should, you know, are all of these things that should be funded, or should some of them perhaps be scaled back? You know, should testing environments still be necessary in V3 after all these years? You know, those kinds of things. So
yeah.
Service level.
So number of courts and then service level.
Yes.
Service level, that's going to be a harder one, I think.
I think that is going to be hard.
Whether it's the appropriate fund. And I would suggest that at some point we talk about the program's total cost. For me, it's important, the total cost, not just IMF, the Child Court Trust Fund, and the general funds.
Correct.
Because if programs are reduced or eliminate the take from all three, now things can move back over, especially if they're more of a central office function. If general fund was used for this and it's now free, it allows general fund money to go to a core central office function. So I think, you know, okay.
So another maybe an easier way to look at service level is there was one program where the funding was for training, but it also paid for travel to go to training. And it's like, you know, should the court be responsible to pay for its own travel to get people to the training? I mean, I think it's like looking at the total cost and trying to figure some of that out.
Total cost?
I would like, I don't know if it should be part of our principles, but I do think that at some point we need to talk about whether or not we should have, you know, a parking lot list we need to do a better job, I think, of tracking total cost because it becomes more important when funds are scarce.
Yes.
You know, in that regard, you could talk about components of programs where you may be able to determine that certain components of the program can be borne by courts, and then maybe parts of it can be borne by a particular fund, which may then give you a different picture as to the efficiency of the program and what you might want to do going forward with it.
And then there's kind of a threshold question, I think, which is should the IMF fund pay for programs that benefit just a few courts when there is a way to calculate, you know, a way for the court to purchase that service as needed? one example would be like the HR investigation.
Right.
Not a lot of courts need to use that every year. When they do need to use it, should it be on the court to buy that service?
Would that be part of service level?
It could be, yeah.
Okay.
I think under service level would fall the issue that you just raised.
Because I see it as,
it's kind of a quasi-fee for service is how I think you first worded it.
I see it as almost a branch from service level and appropriate for IMF, because if it's not appropriate for IMF, where does it go? It could be a local court expense, it could be a general fund expense, it could be a trial court trust fund expense, or something else we don't, you know, so it's kind of a combination. So, appropriate for IMF, if not where?
Yes.
Now, let me ask you, when you say
these are principles. We're talking principles.
Yeah, but when you say appropriate, I mean, most of these are have been identified as appropriate. The question is, are there other alternative funding sources?
I would push a little bit on that for a couple of reasons. The statute we just passed out is a bit vague, but there are some specificity in terms of what it can cover. The LAO report came out recently with some guidelines. We might want to consider those guidelines. They're not mandatory, but we might want to consider those guidelines for things that we think the IMF should be used for.
I guess I'm just getting at the term appropriate versus are there other alternatives, fund sources, or...
Do you want me to put that under...
I'm just trying to explore what Jerry's saying. With appropriate, yeah.
It really is just the best resource.
That's the best resource.
Not only the best, but also does it fall within, even though it is a vague government code section to a limited extent, does this line item fall within that definition and the legislative intent of the government code for the IMF fund?
And somewhere we should probably talk about, you know, if not where, consequence, you know, what would be the consequences, and does there need to be some kind of a phase-off, you know, or something? I mean, okay.
And then I have just one more, and then I really am going to shut up. So,
I think it might even be, if not where, it's kind of a branch from that, because if it's not, if we think it's not an IMF expenditure, it might be that we can't just cut it 100% next year. There might need to be a phase-off approach, or there might need to be an impact. Yeah.
And then the final one that I thought about was where we have IMF or TCTF contributing some money so we can draw down match from some other funding source, like a federal, like CCPOR, by spending whatever we're spending this year, we get to draw down an additional $850,000 of, you know, of funding from
leverage,
EMS or some other, CalEMA or some other place. So I think we want to make sure that we're not losing opportunities to leverage outside funding, being short-sighted about where we appropriate.
So maybe under impact it could be financial leverage, because that is an impact, right, to the branch?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry,
I think Rebecca had her hand up.
It's fine. I think this is actually kind of in the same vein as Kim's and actually the consequences and what have you. But on the flip side, I think we should take into consideration, are we leaving a hole that has to be dealt with again next year? It's the other side of the service level.
Yeah.
Are we creating a conversation that we're going to just be deferring to next year for some of these programs?
So are you saying you would like to see permanent ongoing planning?
Well, when we're making the decisions for the programs that are ongoing, are we reaching at least a certain threshold where we're getting measurable service, where we don't have this massive hole that we obviously are going to have? Like, for instance, you know, we talked about the CCTC, technology program. If we're just deferring the conversation to next year, I don't think we're doing anything.
I agree. So would you put under impact, financial leverage, and then ongoing solution.
Sorry, David. Yeah, well, I was going to circle back to the service level and appropriate for IMF issue, and should we consider the cost effectiveness of the decision? I mean, is that a factor? If everybody needs to do their own thing with respect to and activity, in the event of costing significantly more than it costs today, is that something that should be assessed in the decision-making process?
I think it's very important.
Yeah.
The cost effectiveness and the practicality of doing it. I mean, until we are more robustly funded, and you don't want to create a situation where we're telling courts you have to go do this on your own, and they can't even do what they need to do on their own. So I think it's important.
I had written value to courts, again, kind of the integration of the surveys, and I'm not sure if we want to talk about that now or after we talk about the surveys, but how will we bring in the survey results to the principals? Maybe we can wait on that one, unless you have any thoughts, the value to the courts. Maybe.
Well, okay. We might want to wait. That may tend to drive the conversation when it may not want that to drive the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That can sort of steer us in one direction, which is how do you accommodate that versus if these are the problems and how do we find solutions where it's impacting courts in a particular way.
Well, part of how I see the IMF fund working is it's a funding source for innovative ideas as well, and there are innovative programs within the IMF, but at some point we need to transition those programs out. It's kind of like you have a lot of pilot projects within the IMF, and there should probably be a certain measuring stick. Maybe it's a 1 to 3 year project, and then we either find additional funds or the program is no longer funded out of IMF because it's not valuable. So some sort of transitioning.
Or it becomes permanent.
Or it becomes permanent.
Yeah.
But there has to be an evaluation tool so they don't stay in IMF indefinitely.
So that's kind of the LAO's recommendation, that it might be seed money for things, but then they become permanent or die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that
something that
we wanted to add, or does that fall within what we've got up there?
Look at pilot project.
But when it becomes permanent, does that then become the obligation of the board, or is that carried by a different fund? I mean, let's figure out
where we go.
Yeah, where we go.
Yeah.
Or do you just say at the end of that, let's say pilot project time, unless it tests or shows some kind of metrics to conclude it's successful enough to be funded by JCC or one of the funds, then it's up to the trial court where it just gets cut. So
no, I think it would depend on the program, and I'll give you two examples. One might be in the future. This is not our role, I don't think, today, unless you want us to. But if the IMF is defined to be startup money for things and courts use them for technology projects, once they're implemented and the cost is ongoing, it probably becomes the court.
Do you put a time frame on it?
You could, but I don't.
You could be sitting there forever.
Right.
I think that's what Sean was suggesting, is some kind of generalized time frame on that.
Yeah. But some might become a court, and some might become a branch if it goes to all 58 courts and, all that kind of thing. So I don't know if we can answer that for every program.
But I think we should keep that in mind. If we're looking at it as an innovation seed money, then that by definition is at one point it's up and out, or it's up and acknowledging that it's going to be permanently funded by some other fund, but not this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to figure out or make suggestions as to where that should be, rather than just say it should be part of IMF and stop at that
amount. Maybe under appropriate for IMF, it would say also, if not where, best practices, alternatives, and timing for IMF, or that kind of capture,
that
timeline, implementation or timeline.
Should that be its own category, or under?
I think that's part of it that's appropriate for IMF.
Yeah, me too. Okay.
Implementation period.
Yeah. Timing, timeline,
implementation, timeline, evaluation.
Sherry, under the appropriateness, when I was reading some of this, also reminded me that at the time that a decision was made, it was justified. we have funding, whether it was part of programming. I think we need to revisit the rationale for some of the programs. I mean, a good example would be our conflict litigation. It's happened for 9 years, and we keep kicking that can down the road. Does it provide some legitimate value? Absolutely. But the same argument could be made that because it has become so effective that we shouldn't fund it anymore because now it has been embedded.
So how would you define what you're saying then is that we need to evaluate all of the programs we're currently funding?
Correct.
So where
under the appropriateness that sure. You know, we should revisit the rationale.
All of them. All of them. Sure, that's what we're here. Mm-hmm.
You know, technology. I mean, again, we have at a point in time made a decision that the appropriateness for using IMS for CCMS and this continuum on a long-term planning was to support this infrastructure. If we're not going to do that, no more CCMS, no more statewide initiatives because we decommissioned some of them. Do we continue to support them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just to Jose's point, how do we determine what projects are actually funded out of IMS?
So that's what these principles are going to help us because what the way the day's going to go is going to start talking about each program, and that's why we thought if principles were behind us, we could start measuring those. So every one of these programs will be evaluated, as Jose's talking about. That,
moving forward, if there's another program, they would go through that evaluation process. I guess I'm talking about future.
You mean in the future?
Yeah.
And use these as ongoing principles?
Right.
And
you know, I think we need to, our goal was to solve the $12 million hole. And if we have extra time, because I think there's other ways to also look at the future, too, and maybe we'll get there tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think some of our principles will firm up and gel as we dialogue about the individual line items that we're going to be coming across over the next few hours. Any other overarching principles that anyone wishes to include on the board? If not, sure. Did you have any additional that you wanted to include on the board?
No, I think it captures all the ones I had.
David, did you have a thought?
I was going to ask Kim if she can clarify for me again the financial leverage.
So a good example is CCPOR. So by matching some other funding source, in this case, I think it's CalEMA or some federal funds, Zlatko would know better than I do, we're able to draw down those funds because we use money to be able to implement, I think it's going to be 3 new courts this year, a large court and two additional medium-sized courts on the CCPOR system. So if CCPOR is important to the branch, if the goal is to get ultimately hopefully all 58 courts using the same domestic violence restraining order registry, then the only, you know, a good way to accomplish that is to have contributions come from external funding sources to help us do that. But hardly any of those come without requiring some kind of match of dollars from branch funds.
Okay, so thank you, Kim. What I was going to ask is, should we explore alternate funding sources for some of these things?
We have that alternative.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a BCP or whether, you know, we don't know what it looks like till we get to the program level. Yeah.
All right. So with those as our foundational principles and guidelines, we're going to try to adhere to and firm up. Might be important to kind of get an idea of what is the distinction between trial court trust fund, where is it, what does it mean when we say the IMF fund, and where are we as it relates to that. Zlatko?
Thank you, Judge. We handed out at least the sort of legislative history on the IMF to give you a sense as to where the fund has been. So there used to be two funds, used to be a modernization fund and an improvement fund. And I think the branch had sort of treated them somewhat fungibly. We've moved money between the programs, so depending on sort of what was going on. We had some budget reductions a few years ago. We moved some programs that were in one fund to the other. But I think what it did is it contributed to some sort of confusion, lack of transparency out in the world, outside of us. And you can see the statutes, there was quite a bit of description as to what some of the funds could be used for, as far as education, what was defining, you know, sort of modernization and improvement. Then in 2012, as an effort to bring a bit of clarity to the management of the branch funds, there was a merger of the two funds, and actually quite a bit of the purpose language that used to be in the other fund disappeared, and it just went to a very sort of technical representation of the fund. But yet in the merging of the two funds, the legislature and the Department of Finance and the administration didn't see any reason because of the merger to pull back on any of the programs that were being funded out of the merged funds. So there was, in effect, an affirmation that whatever was being spent in the merged fund, wherever it came from previously, and however it was structured in the statute, was still an acceptable type of expense. So there was nobody that said, we've merged it, and we took out some specific direction, and now we want you to pull that type of program out. It was sort of by default, all of the programs that the council had approved to be spent out of the two funds was now accepted, and it's been accepted, as the kinds of programs that we can spend this money on. Any questions about sort of the history? Because we were trying to sort of sort out, one is the trial court operating fund, so to speak, and one was other project costs and other program costs for the IMF. So it's an attempt to try and clarify what we use our branch funds for. But when you look at the trial court trust fund, and we'll talk about it a little bit in a minute, there are individual programs. It's not just money that goes to the trial courts for trial court operations. There's still some other expenditures out of the trial court trust fund that might feel and look like what we might have otherwise funded out of the IMF. So we've kicked that around, and one of the things that a BCP was submitted to the Department of Finance and is reflected in the governor's budget is that we were proposing to move some technology expenses, namely the V3 CCMS expenses, from the TCTF, Tropical Trust Fund, into the IMF, sort of to get more of the technology-related expenses into the IMF. That was in part also associated with a revenue move from the TCTF to the IMF. Part of budget solutions, we were moving money around to also offset cuts. And there was an actual movement of money from the IMF into the TCTS in an effort to try and solve this shortfall in the IMF. You move money back to a fund that was the sort of origin of source, a fund of source. So money was going out, money staying now in the fund. We're moving some expenditures back into the fund. I know it's very complicated. I'm trying not to make it, but it's sort of where we're at in all the different steps that we took to try and solve the general fund budget cuts that are happening to the branch and the trial courts. So this group over the last couple of years has tried to look at what is TCTF appropriate and what is IMF appropriate. And as I said, the V3 costs were one of the large issues where we said, let's move those costs over into the IMF. But there's still some issues that you'll see in terms of interim case management costs, the Court Technology Center, that are still funded out of the TCTF. There's a mix of TCTF expenditures directly on the programs, and some of which we receive reimbursement from courts to help cover the cost of the program. So it is a mismatch. And, you know, we'd like to get to clarity, but I think we can only bite, you know, and choose so much at any one time. So at this point, you know, we may in our discussions decide that something moves from one side of the house to the other, but it's still not like a savings. And if we don't spend in the IMF, and that helps the IMF, and we move it to the TCTF, well, there's no room in the TCTF to absorb it. So some consequence will occur on the trial court trust fund side to some other program or to trial court allocations. You move it the other way, then you create a bigger hole in the IMF, then that means there's other cuts that have to happen. So at this point, we don't have fund balances in either of these funds to really have a lot of room to play. We don't have a revenue stream that's unencumbered or unobligated to this point. So it's all sort of a zero-sum game. There's going to be impacts with our realignment. We're just trying to think logically what fits one side and what fits the other.
And to further complicate it, and I think it's something for a future discussion if we have time tomorrow or in the future, I think what complicates it for me is there's also general funds that's allocated to the Judicial Council. And so for many programs, they may cross over all three. There may be general fund, IMF, and trial court trust fund. And there, in many of the programs, or some, I can't say many because I don't really know if I know, the administration of the program done by Judicial Council staff could be a general fund in some programs, but some you'll see the administration of the program is an IMF account. And so it's very complicated. And at the end of the day, it won't be perhaps we may not be able to clean it up in this meeting, but I would love to see almost definitions of what belongs with general funds, you know, central office responsibility and trial court trust fund and IMF, because right now it's kind of it's very messy. So.
Right, and to that point, that's something that the state auditors pointed out as far as what is visible as a state operations cost and a state and a local assistance. That's something that we will talk about as a Judge Earl will talk about that maybe later as far as looking forward and working on resolving the audit issues that have come up. But we do in our materials talk about, you know, this difference between state operations and local assistance as it is now.
Right. Yeah.
Where it should be, and improving clarity and understanding. That's a longer-term plan, working with the administration and the legislature on how to do that. But it is complicated, and it is sort of this evolution of child court funding.
Right.
Where you had, in the past, you didn't even have necessarily, you had a improvement modernization fund appropriations in the budget, but yet there was need for staff to help support that, and so where did the money go? How did it move around to help support those? Because there's certain restrictions on how what we can do as a Judicial Council staff with money that's budgeted in a different way. So it's just this sort of, even though it seems like it's been, you know, over a decade since trial funding, we're still in an infancy in terms of managing the state-local relationship, state trial court relationship, state court relationship that's evolving over time.
And I think that's one thing that we will begin to unravel and appropriately begin to align some of these issues, because I think over the past 10 years and in prior administrations and when there was better funding for the branch as a whole, the funding issue kind of got into this big ball of yarn and things were maybe mixed and done in ways that really make it very difficult to understand. And I think part of our process here is to begin to unravel that ball of yarn and begin to identify what belongs where and make it easier to follow and make it easier to track, not only externally but within the branch itself. And I think that is kind of an overarching theme, not only for this group but also as we address the audit issues as well.
And it's not an issue of appropriateness. It's an issue of transparency and ease of understanding the flow of funds.
Right.
You know, we want users and the public to understand how the branch is funded. And there is this mix of, you know, what is managed by Judicial Council but on benefit of the trial courts versus, you know, what is Judicial Council staff versus what are dollars go directly to a local trial court with no involvement of Judicial Council staff in it. And, you know, the auditor seemingly in a different way, well, we need to respond and improve. So that would be something we'll be working on.
Judge Harmon?
How do we identify, though, what's appropriate if we don't have the definitions of these different categories? I mean, how do we know if we don't have any idea, you know, what belongs with Judicial Council staff, what belongs with IMF, and what belongs with TCPF? How are we going to go through this in terms of determining if it's appropriate for my IMF? We don't even have the definitions of...
I think there's two stages. I mean, regardless of where it sits, we have a $11.5 million problem. So where it gets, and all of these sort of issues, that has to be dealt with. Where they sort of end up falling, I think it, to me, is a next more technical step of how it's budgeted. But we're going to look at all of these, and some are judicial council staff, some are programs managed by the judicial council staff, and some are just, you know, allocations to trial courts, and they do their work. I feel like, in my opinion, that they're two steps. It's, I don't think you have to be bound by this boxes in understanding the overall program, what its benefits are to the trial courts.
So if I had my dream, right, we would be doing it at the same time, but because of this $12 million, $11.5 million hole, we have to solve that for next fiscal year. And then I think there may be a time where we can try to bring clarity to those accounts. So that might be something that we can do in the future that would help say, okay, central office function, general fund for the judicial council. You know, we'd have clearer definitions, and it might be that we can start defining those as we start deciding where things go under, is it appropriate for IMF, if not where, and then the problem is there's no money, you know, in any of these other two, whether it's a general fund or whether it's trial court trust fund, there's no money there either. So that's why we'll have to talk about the phase-off or the, you know, alternatives or something like that. But it might help position the judicial council, in my opinion, if they now have better definitions of what we would recommend fall there, but they could go get a BCP or ask for additional funding or something. Maybe that would actually help, I would like to believe.
Steve, does that help, though? I don't know.
I mean, I think we'll have to kind of see as it goes, but it's hard when you know, knowing that some of these have fall into two or three of these categories.
Well, there's two categories. There's state operations and local assistance. That's budgeting. There's also the funds, and it's IMF or GCTIP budgeting. Then there's just the program value in and of itself. So I think, I mean, so let's state off local assistance, trial court trust fund, IMF. Those are more how budgeted. We're talking about the program needs and its appropriateness, whether it is state office of local assistance or TCTF or IMF kind of fall out. I think we're trying to evaluate, first and foremost, the value of the expense to the trial courts. As you know, this part that we have mandated, is it required for the court service levels? Then we start getting into, you know, the appropriateness, and I don't know if there's in some sort of order of importance, but I mean, I think if we look at it from where it should be, that's probably missing a point of what's the most important expense of the dollar.
Yeah,
where it falls is.
So I think we can answer that question just as you've laid it out. Break out the state ops and the local assistance. That's something that you guys just print a report out. I mean, it's really easy, and you can see that by project. And I think that's really important because
it is broken out. It's your handout.
Excuse me?
It's already a handout. Yeah, I think it's 4A. Yeah, it's 4A.
Oh, by each one?
Yeah. It just doesn't include the general fund.
The general fund support,
mm-hmm.
that supports these, you mean?
Yeah.
And what about the reimbursement?
I think it includes that, too. Yeah, they're there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I missed that.
David?
I was going to just make an observation. This is my third opportunity to participate in this exercise of trying to reconcile the deficiency in funding that we have with the obligation. And each year, we've been able to make a little bit of progress by reducing some of the expenditures coming out of each account, but all of the reductions have been extremely painful, I think, collectively. If we go through this process and we find, dang it, we've got mandated responsibilities, we've got all of the courts dependent upon the service, critical service levels for the IMF, the impact is pretty significant. Are we still looking at just cutting anyway? I mean, I'm just trying to make sure that I'm understanding our net results.
So for me personally, I can tell you that from reviewing these 100 different ways, I do not think all of them fall into, we're going to end up just doing an overall cut of 25%. I think they're, for me,
there's variability.
I think there may be variability. I've been with you too. It's painful. Okay.
Well, I actually didn't get to my main question. which was, I think, part of the problem. I like the way that you suggested, Judge, that it's a ball of yarn. That's a good analogy. And what we've ended up, though, is rolling that ball of yarn year after year instead of really coming down and tackling and saying, what's the priority? How do we piece it out? And so my encouragement is that we not take a let's get through this year and do something that's easy and expedient, and the ball of yarn only gets messier each time you do that. And let's instead prioritize some projects and programs, make the tough decisions that are ongoing and beneficial. And there's a lot of stuff after year, and we've been doing this exercise for years, that are there's still some, gee, it was nice, and that was the conception 6 years ago of how it should work. Well, we're not 6 years ago.
Yeah.
We pockets are empty. So we need, in my view, I would encourage us really to prioritize projects, make the real, so let's not just do one-time expedient, easy things to do. Let's do the real cuts, prioritize it, and then go. That would be my encouragement.
And, you know, it seems to me, and I agree with you 100%, it seems to me, just looking at the surveys themselves, there's a natural prioritization that's occurring based on what the court feedback is. So I think that task, once we get to that number of courts benefiting, I think there's going to be a natural prioritization there anyway. So I agree with you, though.
Reminds me of the book Secret Cows Be Better Burgers.
I'm not even quite certain how to respond to that, but I'm sure there is a response to it.
Judge, if I can, I concur with what Stephen is saying, because, you know, this is an ongoing problem. This isn't a one-time issue. And I think for the last couple of years, the solutions that have been developed are really one-time, and there needs to be a fix.
Yep.
Because, you know, every year we just keep our fingers crossed that, you know, all of a sudden money will start dribbling in, and guess what? It's not dribbling in. So,
and the last time
and it's tough, but it's something that we just got to get our arms around.
If we don't fix it as a group, it will be fixed for us.
Absolutely.
In a way that we may not like.
Yeah.
I just remind you of our last two-day meeting we had in October of 2013.
Please don't remember
Don't
remember it, though.
How difficult it was is that after the first day in which we were supposed to solve a problem, we walked out spending $10 million.
More. Okay, stop. Moving ahead.
How important these programs are.
No increases.
The information is actually that they are important, and in some cases suggested expansion, when we were sitting in the back quivering thinking we just spent more money. We have to get this back the next day. So understand that it is difficult.
So it is difficult, and in response to that, having lived through the same painful three meetings David did, part of it is, there is a true inequity in how the funds have been allocated. And so by looking at each program separately and independently without looking at it as a total, which is part of what that problem was, once you realize that it didn't benefit all 58 courts, and if you added other courts, what would it look like? That's what happened.
Right.
And so part of these little pet projects is they benefit certain courts differently.
So with that, I'm sorry, Rebecca, I didn't mean to.
Well, I was just going to say, I think, you know, Jody's points are exactly what she articulated it better than I did, but the one-time solutions, that's exactly what I was talking about.
Right.
But also, I think, and I'm not trying to read his mind or anything, but I think part of what David's trying to say, maybe, and I wasn't on those meetings, but I do think that we are going to have to take all this criteria at once, because I don't think that there is you can't take something, you know, in a vacuum and make that decision, because where there may be some inequities, those inequities may be serving the greater population, or they may be servicing the greater issue than simply a distribution across 58 counties. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not picking out any one program, but I do think you have to take all that criteria into effect and talk about the impact as a branch and truly as a state versus individual inequity too, you know. And I don't know if that's what you were getting at, but that's kind of what I read into it. So, yeah.
That's part of our
right,
So why don't, I think it's probably a good time to transition, and why don't we go through the spreadsheet, and I don't know, Zlatko, do you want to run through it?
Which spreadsheet are you referring to? I'm talking about the, we're going to move to the Shawcross Trust Fund.
Why don't you do that first? Run through that first, and then we'll move to the IMF.
It's the first issue, item one, the Shawcross Trust Fund allocations.
Do you have a
page one of the materials? It talks about some allocations that we think should be discussed at this point. And I was going to talk at a high level about sort of the status of the Shawcross Trust Fund, which is on page 7. So page 7 is what is called a fund condition statement. The balance sheet is sort of where you, the money you get in, and the spending that you do, and where you're at the end of the day, or in this case, the fiscal year. And so at the top, we have how we ended fiscal year 12-13, how we ended fiscal year 13-14, what was the initial estimates of what 14-15 would look like, and looking at the actual expenditure patterns, 14-15, we have some assumed savings in certain programs that then we think are a more realistic view of how we will end 14-15. We have then sort of the net of what 14-15 looks like, and then what 15-16's estimated sort of status and fiscal condition is, which reflects the recommendations, right? So that 15-16 reflects the what would be our recommendations for some of these allocations that Colin will go through. So again, it's year by year. What happens is you start with your beginning balance in your checking account, your income into the your account, what you spend your money on, and what's left at the end of the day. So the important lines are in green, called the ending fund balance, sort of where we end each year. So as you walk between 12-13 and 13-14, we spent down $60 million. Of the fund balance, made up sort of primarily of two things, that actual revenues in 1 year actually went down. So we had expenditures and revenues were lower, so we had less revenue to cover our expenses. And we had to pay for some things that the state was not funding us for, primarily benefits. So we ate into our fund balance by a substantial amount. And then you get to where we think we'll be. We skip all the way over to column E and how we see we're thinking where we get $21 million. We think we're going to be at about $26 million at the end of 14-15. Here's a complicating factor. Of the amounts that are in our fund balance, there are restrictions to them. You know, you just can't spend this money on whatever you want. The council or statute has restricted certain pots of those dollars. So you can see the bottom starting on line 35, the breakdown of those amounts. And the single largest component of the fund balance designation is 14.7 for interpreters. And you're all familiar with the fact that the council has updated the reimbursement policies and the use of interpreter money. We are allocating monies out to courts who are expanding interpreter services. That money is set aside. So it's like, great, we have $26 million. Well, $14 million of it is set aside for a specific purpose. Court-appointed dependency is a restriction. We have monies that are related to Sacramento Court getting reimbursed for redevelopment agency costs. Those are all little pots that we have to set aside. And what we expect by the end of 14-15, when you assume certain program savings that otherwise wouldn't be captured until the end of the year, we have about a $9 million, what's called unrestricted fund balance, monies that can be used to allocate to course for general expenses. Well, that's important because that means that we're going to make sure that we get through this fiscal year covering any revenue softness so that you don't have any allocation reductions in the current year. We've had an ongoing struggle about managing the Shawcross Trust Fund revenues. We've gotten some assistance in the budget from the Department of Finance and the legislature to cover some of the shortfall, but not all of it. So you carry forward the beginning fund balance, the $26 million to the top of 15-16 under column F. And then we start, we have all of our revenues, we have expenditures, and we get to what is a roughly $20 million remaining fund balance, of which, again, a large portion of that is restricted for interpreters that we folks expect to spend over the next couple of fiscal years. And the bottom line is we have like a $3.7 million currently estimated fund balance at the end of next year. And why is that important? Well, it's small, and there could be some change. I mean, if there's a $5 million flip on some revenues, then all of a sudden that could be negative. And we would have to then figure out how to deal with that shortfall. But I think at this juncture here in early March, really the first double-digit day of March, having this conversation about necessarily resolving a TCTF problem is something that we should look at as we get towards the end of this fiscal year, given that it's sort of on the smaller side, and we have more revenue information, and we know what the Department of Finance is doing in the budget for the TCTF. And the reason that this is important is because previously when this body recommended to the Budget Advisory Committee, then recommended to the Judicial Council to move $20 million of revenue from the TCTF back into the IMF, the revenue at the top all of a sudden had a hole. So the concern that Sherry had appropriately was, well, if there's $20 million less in the IMF or in the TCTF to cover your base allocations, do we need to be looking for solutions to reduce expenditures so that there aren't allocation reductions to each of your courts? So, it, like I said, it's, I'm trying to take it slow about how it all works. Yes, Sir Gerald.
In terms of your projection for next year, you make certain assumptions, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And can you kind of explain, without going into all of them, what type of assumptions you make?
And I think that Judge Earl's looking at this negative on line 43. There's one more concept within your budgeting. It's you can have a bunch of money in the bank account, but your flow of revenues is less than your annual expenditures. And what you're going to do is you're going to spend that money, spend all of your revenue, and dip into your bank account. So there's this thing called a structural imbalance where your revenues are lower than your expenses. That's what this $5.6 million represents. It says if we had zero money in the bank, our revenues are $5.6 million lower than our annual expenses. And so we have a structural shortfall. So while I'm sitting here telling you that the problem isn't, you know, a major, and though Stephen will probably suggest, well, we still are carrying forward a $22.7 million allocation reduction that happened in the current year because DOF didn't recognize all of our revenue shortfall. That assumes to continue. So that is a problem that folks will have been, unfortunately, managing this year and will carry forward because there's no support from the administration to give us more revenues for that. So I'm not going to diminish it. It's a problem that exists. But in terms of year-over-year change, we're very close to where we were in terms of your allocations. We take a breath here. I want folks to digest because it is complicated, but then it is sort of like your pocketbook.
So from a fiscal perspective, you want to have it. You obviously do not want that structural deficit.
Right.
Right? And how much money would you want and carry over year to year?
Well, I mean, we used to have a $40 million structural shortfall, a $58 million structural shortfall, 14, 15 reduced because for two reasons is we got an infusion of general fund and we unfortunately allocated a $22.7 million reduction. So we got some money and we reduced expenditures and that closes the gap.
But from a fiscal perspective, what would be the ideal amount that you,
right,
for stability's sake, if you will, that we should be carrying over year to year?
And I'd like it to be much higher, but at this point we can't afford to choose fiscal stability over allocations to your courts. You know what I mean? The point is that if I said, let's hold back and leave more money in the bank, you'd have to spend less. And you've already spent less. You're already getting $22.7 million reduction in your allocation. So you have to save money, you have to cut money because we're not getting new money into our funds.
But in the perfect world, what number would that be?
So, but before we answer that, if you go to line 6 and look at civil fee revenue, do you see how much that has actually fallen since 12-13? Part of the problem with this account is we rely on filing fees.
Yep.
And so I would propose that we not focus on this. If I am someone who plans to a fault in the future, but with this account, it may swing back up with the improved economy. So I'm not sure we should worry as much about this as what our task is right now, because we can cover next year. We can do some trend analysis on filing fees. Stephen does that all the time, right? If we start to see that we need to have a discussion about this in the future because we will never get those filing fees back, then we need to look at it. But I'm not really sure we should focus on it in this meeting.
And I didn't want to ignore it because it is an important. We're focused on the IMF, but there was a time when we were looking at TCTF at this subcommittee, and you know we have certain allocations that we need to recommend to take it forward, and that's part of what we're doing today.
So what I hear you say is the trial court trust fund is not exactly healthy. However, it's not our primary focus right now. Right now our primary focus is the IMF fund because we do have the ability to cover the trial court trust fund this year and into next year.
Sherry's concern was that that revenue pullback out of the TCTF is going to add additional allocation reductions, but when you have one-time savings, you can cover next year at this point.
But by the same token, if we shift expenses out of the IMF back to the TCTF, because under our new logic as to how we're going to try to get the right expenditures and programs
right
out of the right place, that may have an adverse effect on this very small fund balance that you're carrying in TCTF.
Right, and that's why I made that point earlier about we're overprescribed in both locations,
mm-hmm.
just the TCTF less so, but it's still the added dollar over there, that's a dollar we don't have.
Right.
Do you want to go to the IMF fund?
Well, we need to get there's recommendations in terms of some allocations that we'd like to take to the Budget Advisory Committee that then we take to the Council.
Got it.
Our goal is that when we get to the July Council meeting that makes our allocations for the base operations, that some of these lesser, and they're all important, lesser controversial, more technical, more sort of they happen on an annual basis because statute requires it, that those are done, can be revisited, because everything is revisitable, depending on what the budget is. But I'd like to get our work done on some of those lesser issues so that those are done in the Council's mind, and everybody already knows that. Like I said, we have certain things that are just statutorily required, but we still have to have them allocated by the Council.
So what's your proposal?
So there's on page 1 and page 2. I think page 2 has our staff recommendations on allocations.
So I do have a question, Zlatko. If we do find, as a group, that we would recommend some of the things funded out of IMF to go to the Trial Court Trust Fund to be consistent with where other programs are or whatever, it would impact these recommendations. Should we hold this till the end?
It will impact the revenues and the shortfall. Unless you think that as we talk about these that something should be less, like court-appointed dependency counsel being any different than the 103.7 that it should be.
No,
Yeah, you know what I mean? These are generally pretty stable issues.
Okay, so you don't think any possible movement, would impact any of these recommendations?
We'll see where we're at, and tomorrow when we recap, we'll just have that in our mind.
Okay.
Certainly have that as an issue that, you spent money over here. Is there any way that shortage, now that you've added expenses, could be dealt with by any of the changes here? For example, we made some aggressive assumptions on jury reimbursement. We've seen jury trials go down, and the level of reimbursement has declined year over year over year. How low is low? How aggressive do we want to be? I don't want to over-budget money and have it just sit there at the expense of trial court allocations. I don't like that, but how aggressive do we get? We're sort of looking at it, and we're saying, okay, look, the number that we have is what staff would support in that as an example.
no change to trial court or pendency council funding. It's at the number that it's been, and we're looking to add that. So it seemed counterintuitive for us to think about a different number less than that when we're continuing to advocate for more money there. So there are recommendations 1 and 2 on page 2, recommendations 3 and 4 on page 4.
Let me kind of raise for an example. If you look on page 3 and you look at recommendation 3, which is outlined on page 4, I'm just using this as an example of what I'm talking about. $325,000 shall be allocated by the Judicial Council in order to reimburse California State Auditor for the cost of trial court audits.
That's in budget bill language, so that's sort of a mandated allocation that the budget bill sets for us to do.
And it says it comes from the trial court trust fund?
Yep.
It's for the six.
Oh, I understand. I was just curious. It did mandate it from the...
appropriated in the trial court trust fund. Auditor.
But the interim case management, some of those are not.
No.
So as we go through the programs, if we say to be consistent, that should maybe go to the IMF side, it would impact these recommendations.
The allocation of it?
Right.
The level is one, and then the location is another.
Right.
Yes.
So are you suggesting that we hold off and do this tomorrow?
I'm just asking if it would make more sense to see whether or not any of these change. I don't know
some of these, and one of the tables shows that it's reimbursed by courts who are participating in it.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
But I tend to agree, actually. Why don't we wait to see what is going to happen when the decisions we make? Then we can always revisit this at the very end. That way we're not kind of...
That's fine. But, let staff call in and talk a little bit about the information.
Yeah, I'll provide just a little bit of context as it relates to these. Just one of the things to consider is that one of the reasons why we're bringing these specific allocation recommendations to the TCTF at this time is because a significant number of these programs are either funded by statutorily restricted revenues. They're mandated by statute, or they have no impact on the 12 court trust fund balance because they're fully reimbursed by 12 court. So therefore, they're basically non-discretionary.
So if they're non-discretionary, and what we do regarding the IMF fund isn't really going to make any difference either way on it, then there's no harm in waiting till tomorrow because they're non-discretionary and we can deal with it tomorrow. Because I just see a little bit of angst of making that decision now. I think that makes perfect sense, but...
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, Colin, the amounts in here, are these mandated as well? So if we go through, like, Sergeant Schreiber, I don't remember that. How does that one work?
It's
right.
Statutory.
We state this in the narrative. These, as it relates to the one that relates to statutorily restricted revenues like Schreiber,
it's added on to filing fees and statutory.
Okay. It's based on an FMLE revenue number.
Yep.
So if the revenue changes, then the allocation would change with the revenue number,
okay,
either up or down. And so that's the case for Shriver. That's the case for Equal Access Fund. That's the case for Dependent
okay.
Council Collection.
Phoenix,
so that's a different one. So that's one that is
first.
That's not statutorily restricted revenue. That one is a fully reimbursed by court. So that's Phoenix, Finance, NHR, V3, CCTC, and ICMS. Yeah, there's a chart on page 8, so that shows what is the reimbursed amounts by any of these that are related to this one particular recommendation.
So, Colin, just to clarify for me, just to make sure it's absolutely clear, because I've read this and circled in red all my questions, so I want to make sure I understand it to clarify. So everything outlined on page 3 has a neutral impact because they're either statutorily mandated, restricted, or 100% reimbursable. Is that correct in those three categories?
All the items under recommendation 1 are. The items under recommendation 2 are not. And those are the CAC training and the enhanced collections, which total $730,000.
So for table 1, for recommendation one, there's zero impact because they're fully reimbursable, statutorily mandated or restricted. And with that, I would move that we approve recommendation one because there's no impact.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition?
Discussion.
Discussion.
On the B3, you have 625. Behind that, the unfunded portion of
moves into, oh, I'm sorry, why is there even an amount there?
That's the reimbursed portion of B3. So the rest of it moves to IMF, but this is the portion that the courts actually reimburse. It's basically related to the hosting cost.
For the tech center.
That's right.
So just a clarification, we're approving the 625 as being reimbursed.
Yeah, so there's zero, so everything in recommendation one is 100% reimbursed by the courts, statutorily mandated, or completely restricted, so there is zero impact. So that's why I would move to approve all on recommendation one.
So I do have one comment that I second is that some of these projects, we're going to look at the related funding on the other side
mm-hmm.
that is optional,
mm-hmm.
and that may impact this. And so we may have to revisit it, and if we do, we'll note it. We'll come. I mean, we'll deal with it at that point. But that could impact this.
Yeah. So you say wait until tomorrow. I withdraw my motion. We'll do it. I would move we wait until tomorrow. How's that? Do you second my amended motion?
The reimbursable part of Phoenix, you're saying that there's an interplay there?
What I'm saying is, so to the extent that any of these projects on the side where it's actually funded out of the IMF, and if we determine in our pulling out the hatchet that that's a project we can't continue with at this point, then the idea of having the reimbursement may not make sense. It would need to be revisited.
So the motion has been
amended to wait until tomorrow. Do you second the amended?
I'm easy, whatever.
I think that's everybody. Okay.
All right.
Okay, just trying to move this along.
Withdraw your motion.
Yeah, withdraw my motion. Okay.
All right.
Keep going. IMF.
Well, yeah, go to the IMF.
Can we cover that part two, though?
Sure.
Because I did want to hear about that as well.
The second recommendation?
Yeah.
So are you talking about recommendation two or recommendation three and four?
Two.
Okay, so two is a recommendation related to two programs that are not funded from... basically are not funded from special restricted revenues, have a negative impact on the Chopper Trust and Fund Balance, or are not statutorily mandated. That's the core point council training, they have the collections.
Collections is required by statute.
Not having your office on board.
Not where it is,
right.
What fund it is, it's just that it has to exist.
Yes, but I don't think there's anything in statute that says that you need to have an office that supports that function.
Basically, the CFP training was funded by PCP several years ago. I can't even remember. I think it was, I noted it in the narrative, but I think it was back in the 2006-07. And that was related to appeals related to NC case hearing. So that was basically funded from the CCTF, and so it's funded from the CCTF ever since. And the enhanced collections was moved from the IMF as approved by the Judicial Council.
That was a recommendation that came out of this entity, Judge Johnson, back in that October.
So the recommendation is to basically approve the allocation of the same amount.
Other option.
So we're waiting till we're going to wait.
All
right. Any other topic on the trial court trust fund before we move to IMF? Any other recommendations that are in this report? All right. Well, we go to the IMF then.
Sure.
I think I
think the fund conditions so people understand the deficit, and then we should probably go to the surveys. I think that was what was next on your agenda, right? On the agenda?
Yep.
Okay.
So similar to what we just discussed with the CCTF, the IMF fund condition statement is on page 24. We're showing the 12-13 year-end financial statements. We had a fund balance, which was on line 21, $44.8 million. 13-14 ended the year with a $26 million, $18 million shift there. Based on the current estimates of expenditures for 14-15, we'll have a fund balance of $4.7 million. And then, so when we get to 15-16, based on our fund balance going forward to start 15-16, and based on the current level of 14-15 allocation, we're short $11.3 million. You can see that under column D, row 21. And then there's this structural shortfall, meaning revenues are less than expenditures, of almost $16 million. So even if we were to solve this $11.3 million problem, we would still have a problem next year of $4 million, $4.5 million, because we will again then have revenues less than revenues less than even those expenditures if we got down to zero. So I think that the points about it being multi-year solution is important for us. And I think that we talked a little bit about the sort of the purpose of the fund. As you know, that in our materials there included this legislative analyst office perspective on the budget change proposal that was included by the administration and the governor's budget related to this realignment of revenues and expenditures for the IMF. And they just raised a couple of questions about the purpose of the fund and what kinds of expenses should be used for it. And I think they do raise the issue of, you know, it's for innovation, it's for improvements, for modernization. Should there be one-time expenses? I think even these concepts have come up in this discussion about multi-year but one-time projects that then prove their worth or not, and then whether or not they should be something that should be transitioned to the trial courts and have them carry them forward. But it is we're not here to necessarily, you know, debate their perspective, but rather I think it is important to raise this to your awareness in so much as this is now an item that's been put before the legislature, whether or not they will act on it or inquire about it. It is just a perspective of the legislative analyst about their views of the use and concerns that we are using it sort of for operational costs, and we don't have any opportunity because it's fully overprescribed fund for any of the improvements and modernization that in theory the fund's name implies we should be using it for.
Would it be helpful for those of you who may not have brought or read the report to have a copy of the page and a half that the LAO report?
Appendix C.
Oh, okay, good. All right, good.
So a little bit of we talked that Sherry mentioned civil filing fees in the Tropical Trust Fund as a source of our sort of revenue softness as a primary driver. If you look at line 5 on page 24, this 50-50 excess fines split revenue, that has declined. I think the high point of that revenue source was in the 70s.
Yeah, what 70s?
The high point of the 50-50 revenue. It has all the revenues that are coming into for the 50-50, and so you can see, yes, in fiscal year 5-6, it was at $70 million, and we're projecting, or the actuals for 13-14 are now down to $26.9 million. A huge, huge drop in that revenue source. So why we're in the fiscal condition we are is because revenues have declined, and the added expenses to the IMF over the last few years. The biggest change in terms of
expenses is that the Phoenix financial costs, which used to be paid for by trial courts, was then, when budget cuts were happening, as a way to provide some relief to trial courts, it was absorbed by the IMF. So, again, another twofold issue of revenues declining, and we added expenses, hastens this decline in our fund balance. And, again, that all these expenses continue from 14-16 into 15-16 at the level they are now, we have an $11.3 million shortfall and an almost $16 million structural imbalance. The Phoenix movement helped you all absorb budget cuts, because instead of having to pay for Phoenix, you have resources now that you could use to, that either were gone because the budget was taken and therefore you have the issue, or an option to manage, that you just have monies to deploy elsewhere where revenues were lost. So, I mean, to say it's, you know, was available dollars, well, it was available dollars to use to cover something where you lost money as a part of, you know, the, you know, $200 million of budget cuts, and where we are now at the $375 million allocated budget reductions to Trotwood. So it was helpful as a drop in the bucket, but it was part of the overall problem that is created for the IMF.
I think that's going to be for us to debate later on whether or not it is mandated number of courts, service level, appropriate for IMF, not to determine that that decision was wrong, because it may be the number one priority. Yeah.
It sort of hastened the, because
right.
I mean, since fiscal 11-12,
right.
11-12, 13-14,
right.
we've had, you know, $25 million of what was the revenues not programmed for that, spending the fund balance down of the IMF.
And one other thing I was going to mention is Stephen has volunteered to take that $11.5 million deficit and to, Stephen, are you going to project it on the screen, or are you just going to keep track there and let us know? He's going to project on the screen our decisions and what happens. So one thing I asked him to do yesterday or the day before is that the Judicial Council at its meeting, I believe in April, already has approved a $1,042,000 reduction in the IT expenses, which would further reduce this. So we've already now reduced it by $1 million.
But since jury was already zero in the current year,
so
it would have had no impact next
so
year.
So 600,000 ahead, whatever it is, 400,000. So if you could start doing that, that will help us see as we're moving forward. And I also, I'm sure you read the materials too, there were some where some of the program managers suggested cuts, and so that will easily, you know, go into our projection as well.
So I've done the fund condition. We've talked about the revenue history. If you want to go into the 50-50, you can see it for yourselves. The precipitous decline, and so it must have sort of followed the understand what types of things are in the 50-50 revenues. I think the lines are somewhat explanatory, but we don't want to move on unless folks understand. Our part is, you know, according to indexing fee, has gone down by $36 million. Base fines is down $17 million.
Isn't that where the red light camera tickets are?
I don't know the answer to that question. Red light camera revenues?
Pretty sure that I went back to find out why it had fallen so much in my county, and a lot of it was the citations have dropped so much.
Sure, they're part of base fines.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I've found, at least in L.A.
If that amnesty program, traffic amnesty program passes, is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Is that something that's anywhere?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Right.
The guarantee is that by doing amnesty, you'll get more revenues than you otherwise would, because there's more incentive for some of these folks. But they're asking to overstated by the legislative amnesty.
And even by our last amnesty program.
Right. Very little, relatively speaking, after costs were deducted, I think there's $12 million. So there was a good fine.
It'll be a lot of workload burden on the courts to implement.
So maybe now a good spot to move to is the survey.
We're going to have Lucy come up and describe the process and explain to you our methodology and all that.
So, as you probably all know, we sent out a survey for trial courts on behalf of the trial courts. We specified the community to joint effort. What we're trying to do is trying to get data for you to assist you with your discussions about how important these programs are, one, for the trial courts themselves, as they look at them individually, secondly, how they value them as a branch-wide program. Other information that was really important for you was how many courts feel they directly benefit. In addition, were the program to go away, would there be an alternative for them to provide that service and you have to support from the IMS? So 56 trial courts responded, which is a very good response rate. What we did is we tried to summarize the results for you. In our discussions, we felt that potentially it might be important to see by cluster. Is it important to a large court versus a small court? Ultimately, we cut data in all ways so you can see statewide versus the clusters, and also summarized by each program, how many courts benefit, and describing all the actual comments the individual courts have provided. So you don't really know what it should be.
On page 28 is a breakdown of the courts stated by judicial officer.
Number of judicial officers.
So I think you've got a separate attachment that has those questions laid out.
So these are pages 27, or 28, 29, 30, and on in the materials.
And at the beginning of this item, we also provide the summary of the programs and the allocation and how many courts we believe benefit for the single district.
Any questions about the survey itself, the method, the data gathered, or anything just about the survey itself before we get into what does it actually mean?
Can you clarify, Lucy, the higher the number, the more important?
Yes, 1 through 10. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I just make an observation that this is a perception from the survey individual that may or may not have a full understanding of, the content or the scope of service being provided for that program.
Right, and I know she's been compiling that courts were responding, I have to rate it, but I don't know what it is, please disregard my rating. So there's some of that in there, and then there's, as we've seen before, the programs that all the trial courts benefit from, and there weren't 56 respondents saying, yeah, we benefit. So absolutely, it's coming from a context of what they know and understand and limited descriptions in the material. Absolutely, yeah.
It's also limited perception-wise in terms of are there alternatives available. Because I know when my CEO and I were going over, it's like, are there alternatives? I don't know. There's no way to know that in this, doing this survey.
Right.
For example, when we look at, say, page 30 and line 26, other post-employment benefits evaluation reports at 41 courts. That was for all 58 courts that was done. That was a single statewide contract that was done for everybody. So we're also concerned whether or not folks actually understand what programs are benefiting from, and is it a bad marketing plan on our part saying, you are using these, do you not know?
Because I would say two things to that. One is, especially for that one, I know there's alternatives available, and courts have used alternatives before that was funded out of the IMF. So
yeah,
the state was not.
The last two times it was.
And then the other observation is, some of the programs, it is true, there's not a lot of courts benefit necessarily, and some courts don't even know what some of these programs are, because they're not serviced by them.
But in some cases, they are getting a benefit and they don't even know it.
Or they don't feel that the benefit is the value to them. Well, it's important to say, Christian, I got my OPEB report, who cares? I don't even know what this is all about, you know, so much of that.
Yeah, because if they did, the controller would be calling them instead of our single vendor and our staff who are managing that
to
help them get that information.
And to the judge's point, there are also alternatives, too, especially for OPEB.
Yeah, that you would pay through your own contracts.
Right.
But we have nothing to judge that against when we're filling these out. So, yes, maybe we pay for our own contract, but we don't know if we got more money through TCTF, if that would make up the difference of doing our own contract. And that's the problem. You don't have these comparisons to make when you're doing a survey like this. Are there alternatives available? Perhaps. Is it less expensive, more expensive, or the same? We have no way to know that when we're doing these surveys.
All I would say is that there's intuitively some things that are managed, some things can be managed sort of at a single point, have an efficiency for them. Some things don't. That's what's hard. I mean, intuitively there are economies of scale when a single thing is happening in one place and not every CEO is getting a call,
to do an RFP and to do a bid and do that. But other times it might be that the program is larger than it needs to be. You're right. I mean, that's a fair point. It's just intuitively there's certain
assumptions that
are proven to be true, though.
The other observation I had is some of the programs within IMF, it almost seems like they've been funded for so long out of IMF, it's almost like it's a core function of what the branch does. And the funding source should not necessarily be out of IMF, but part of, the JC budget or, via BCP or something like that. It seems just like a core function of what we do.
So give an example of what you're talking about.
Audit services.
Teacher.
Litigation management.
Exactly. These are all central
functions. Through the top 15, 20 of these items, which, as you see, the top 15, 20 of these all have the highest statewide average when you lump them together. Just at a first glance, it looks like these are functions that should be handled from another funding source rather than the IMF. Mm-hmm. These are core functions that we absolutely need to have.
A central office function.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where the economy of scale, as Lotto is saying, comes into play.
A lot of it underlines unification itself.
Mm-hmm.
It really is like a core concept of, well, why did we unify? Well, we unified to do all of these things in a singular way, and that's really how it's evolved. So now if you want to look at it sort of in the rear view mirror, is it not innovative? It was innovative 15 years or 20 years, and it's not innovative now because it really makes up who we are as a unified core.
Yeah, even the security grants for updating our magnetometers, that should be a central office function because it's part of our security for the judicial officers, but we don't, it kind of got lined there accounting-wise, and if we move it, we have to figure out, well, what does that mean, and is there money there? No, there's not, so how are we going to get it, and do we do a phase-off, and, all of those things.
When you say phase off, what do you mean?
I mean that if we decide as we go through the programs, they don't make sense there using this criteria, they belong somewhere else. If we say, ideally, this belongs general fund for judicial counsel, trial court trust fund, local court, do we need to give them a 1, 2, 3-year phase off to give them an opportunity to do their own RFP, to get their own money locally, to find a BCP, to whatever it is?
And then one thing we have to be mindful to, I agree with you, and I think we have to be mindful when we start talking about phasing things off to the general fund, those are decisions that have to be made by judicial counsel. So, though we may agree that it should be a general fund, or we may recommend it, that may or may not be what judicial counsel might agree with. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't necessarily talk about it or identify it.
There may be a way, that's an important point, and there may be a way of doing it, though, that is in our realm, which is we don't prioritize that particular activity out of this fund. We think there's value to the fund. We recommend that it get funded through BCP or something, but we don't prioritize the resources, the limited resources that we have.
Isn't it also involved sort of a bigger discussion about who we are when you're talking about if these are core functions that underlie a unified court system, then, you know, asking about lines 1 through 8 or 1 through 20 and saying, well, we don't prioritize this out of the IMF fund, but, you know, we want to put it over in the judicial counsel column. I mean, the whole other conversation goes along with that. I mean, in terms of, like, who are we? How are we? We're talking about restructuring. We're talking about, you know, sort of reforming the whole court system. Well, where does all that fall in? Because these are really critical things. It's not like we can just do without them. We really need them, and that's the argument for let's look at this a little differently. Let's look at policy change within the branch. And some of that belongs to judicial counsel, not like Julia Tate did. It's like, well, we have to figure out who we are. We have to figure out how we advocate for ourselves. Where is this money coming from? And this is like base going forward, but part of who we are structurally, so that when we're talking about the IMF fund, we really are talking about the things that define that fund and what its original purpose is or what its evolved purpose is. I mean, to me, it's not just an accounting thing. It's not just a pushing it from column to column to something a little greater than that.
Mm-hmm.
Just John. Well, I was wondering if maybe our role is a little bit more than just identifying where to make cuts today, but also starting to engage with the judicial counsel in, first of all, incorporating what Marco was saying about the history of the IMF and making it clear that we understand it to be the successor of those two individual entities that were statutorily defined, and therefore our decisions are trying to bolster the strength of those funds in accordance with the original rationale for this fund, and therefore we're making policy recommendations that take away certain expenditures from those funds that are not appropriate in light of that history and those definitions. And as Judge Smith was saying, suggesting that this requires policy analysis by the judicial counsel. I think we have to give the counsel direction.
And I think that dovetails with what Stephen Nash was referencing earlier, that we, as part of this subgroup, are looking at the IMF fund. And this is what we are suggesting needs to be our prioritization as it relates to the IMF fund. And these other things that we think maybe should fall somewhere else is that dialogue of we believe these need to be paid for. As far as the prioritization from the IMF fund, it falls way on the low end.
Right, and then I think that has a benefit in turn of being more understandable at audit time,
right.
And more transparent.
Yeah.
The reality is there has been cuts over the years. There's nothing. We've got to get to a bottom line, and there is an accounting component of this.
Yeah.
We do have to get to a bottom line. And there's nothing that's not going to be painful here. And there's nothing that doesn't have value. I mean, all of these have some level of value, some historical and some current. But we've got to get to a bottom line. That's the difficulty in a very short time.
Right, and we have to maintain the integrity of these funds as these funds are meant to be.
Yeah. So let me just ask, while we have been on the topic of the survey and some of the limitations of the survey, which all surveys come with limitations. We recognize that. But with some of the limitations that have been addressed this morning as it relates to this particular survey, do you still find value in the results of the survey for purposes of going forward with our analysis today?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you integrate them into our high-level priorities? Would it be the number of courts, the would you do it by both looking at benefit to the branch and courts receiving direct benefit, those two? Or what would be your thoughts in terms of our principles?
Say that again.
So we have two summary. One is benefit provided to judicial branch, which is actually different than number of courts receiving direct benefit. So would you look at both of those together kind of as we look at our principles here?
Well, if you merged the two, isn't that sorted under statewide average? That's kind of a merging of both.
No, because I think I can tell you I answer differently for a benefit to the branch versus whether or not my court directly benefited.
But I guess the spreadsheet that is attachment 3C, isn't that a merging, even though you may have answered that differently, isn't this one a merging of all of the comments?
That would be directly the number of courts. Whereas the page 29 is really more value to branch under service level. Value to court is page 30. So I would think we'd probably look at both depending on the program because it says different things. It might be important to the branch.
29 and 30.
Yeah. Did I get that right, Lucy? I sure hope I got that right. Okay, good. That's how I read it. Okay.
All right. So with that, anything else on the survey? If not, maybe it's time to just start looking at the line items. What do you think, Sherry? Is there something else we need to tackle before we move to the line items?
No.
Let's do it.
Good girl.
I had a question. Were we going to at some point kind of go through the statutory definition of the modernization just to kind of take a look at what the statute says it's supposed to be? I realize it's somewhat there, but...
Let's do it, because I think that gives us the foundation from which to address each of the items.
That's a great idea.
You have to look at the historical point. You guys both.
Well, I thought that Blanco's argument that the legislature had basically folded these into the new fund and denominated it the successor fund was an observation and... legitimizes, I think, reaching back to the history to find out what is the scope of these funds and what is the purpose of these funds. And I'm comfortable with that.
We were a little bit frustrated with staff in that when this new statute came out, that even though all those expenditures were in there still, that a number of the certain guiding principles were not carried forward, and so we were concerned that someone would view that the more narrowly described fund would not be appropriate for what was included. That no one report annually on what was included in there. And it does say may include but not limited to as sort of the catch-all for the council sort of has this authority to make that allocation.
So in a nutshell and in easy something that's easy enough that I could even understand it, what qualifies under the IMS funding?
Promote improved access, efficiency, and effectiveness in trial courts that have been applied to the full system. Projects approved by the council, vendors, trial courts, and other responsibilities, and then it starts to list some of them, to the officers and court staff to participate in education, and local trial court education. Again, technology that promotes efficiency, sabbaticals that I don't think have been funded in some time, improved legal research. I mean, those are at least four enumerated areas of sort of priority in some respects. And then the rest of it is more technical in terms of how and when what sort of management of the fund. But when you read it, improved access, efficiency, and effectiveness. We've talked about projects and programs. Some projects can have a limited nature, demonstration projects, for example. I think that we've talked about it, even like with Judge Earl and others. Does this fund take the risk
of implementing something that the trial court doesn't have to, so that if the idea is that we want to try something to see on a pilot basis if it works or not, if it works, then we've proven it through that pilot, and then it can be something that is rolled out to all courts, so that they're not using their operational money on, you know, on something that this fund could be funding, you know, as a sort of demonstration project program. I have to say that there's some aspect that should be one time in nature. And that doesn't mean one time meaning 1 year, but it, the period of duration that can end with some evaluation, and then some evaluation to determine whether or not it should go forward for all courts to implement. I think our struggle is that everything in the fund at this point is an ongoing. So there isn't any room for new efforts to promote access, new efforts to promote efficiency, or new efforts to improve the effectiveness of the chocolate operations. We're just kind of doing the same thing. Oh, pushing the yarn ball down the road.
Yeah. So to circle back to your point, Kurt Child, to look at the modernization fund, you were kind of wanting to kind of circle back to that. Is that because maybe it's a little bit more instructive?
Yeah, and keeping in mind, I think what the legislature was thinking at the time in combining these funds, this was at the time of 1208 that was being held over, you know, on the Senate side, and so they were looking at how do we clarify simplify, I think is probably the better word, between all three of the funds. And so they took out that kind of the language, the education, improved technology, and so forth, left it more broad, but it was clear that the IMF was intended to be a council-directed fund, so the dollars would be administered directly shall be administered by the Judicial Council. And as Zlatko pointed out, I mean, finance legislature made a very rough effort to sort of sort out between the funds what should land where. So I think there was still a view that what you see, for example, in the modernization fund, those items would be appropriate items for the council to be including, or for them to include in this and the council to administer.
So the 1 through 4 from the modernization fund are incorporated, even though they're not specifically spelled out in the IMF code.
Yeah, I mean, in application they were.
Okay.
Yes.
And the modernization fund, was as a result of a general fund transfer. There were no other revenues that were in that fund, and they were built up by budget change proposals that the branch submitted and got funded. So, and, you know, I think I asked Stephen at one point, it was like, I don't know if you've done it, was saw each BCP that was submitted and built the general fund amount that was in the MOD fund, whereas the improvement fund had its revenues in there, and then it had sort of, you know, those developed differently than the way in which the BCPs that built the MOD fund were. But when they merged, everything just became part of the program. Part of the expenditure plan. Is that right, Stephen? The history of it?
The going way back, I don't know the history. I know that there was an agreement that between the governor and the legislature to give us like $31 million or whatever it was for the MOD fund. I don't know that that was based on BCPs. There may have been some added to it, but there was an agreement at the back, going way back to early trial court funding, and there was, and a pot, this pot of money, the MOD fund, it was funded. And that became, but it became, it all kind of ended up where it ended up.
Yeah. I mean, budget cuts were happening. $20 million was moved, as I mentioned, into the Chocolate Trust Fund. There was a group that got together that talked about what should be reduced, and some programs moved from one fund to the other. I'm not entirely clear what was the rationale for that, but there was some. Oh, Colin has a breakdown of what was in that MOD Fund 37, but if it's helped at all. But, yeah, it's an evolution, and I think, you know, Jose is elusive. Over the years, as there was money, then we just spent it on. Now that there's not the money, then not necessarily having guiding principles for the expenses that occurred over the years, then you have this hodgepodge, for lack of a better word, of programs, and they weren't ever evaluated as priorities against one another. They just were expenses in the fund.
I wanted to just add, I just have, you know, I haven't looked at the statute in a long time now, but in looking at it, it does not seem to contemplate, as I think the Improvement Fund does, that the funds are for pilot program purposes only. I mean, it doesn't talk about, you know, things paid out of mod fund will have a sunset date or should be project only or whatever. It lays out four areas, one of which I've never seen the judicial sabbatical, but the other three areas, education, technology, and legal research, I mean, the sense is that these were worthy areas to fund and that this is the place that the funding would come from. And so I think when we look at CEDR being funded out of the IMF, it was probably originally funded out of the mod fund because it was definitely one of these line items that was articulated in the original statute. Same thing, some of the technology things would have ended up, you know, in the IMF now. They probably started in the mod fund and moved to the IMF when it all got rolled together. I don't think we've ever tried to do technology legal research out of the mod fund. You know, something I think that was a goal at one point of SEAC was to have, you know, the state come up with contracts for LexisNexis and Westlaw. And, you know, that would have been a perfect expense under this model to fund out of the mod fund. But so the mod fund, I think, was not perhaps perceived in the same way as the improvement fund. But now that the whole thing has been rolled into one great big ball of dough, it's hard to sort out and tease out what should have, you know, standalone legs that would last forever and which things should be pilot projects.
I mean, at one time the improvement fund was the emergency reserve.
Correct.
So that got eliminated and we got the 2% process created out of your own money.
The IMF statute really kind of reads almost tailors the improvement fund and doesn't really incorporate much of anything from the modernization fund.
Right.
I mean, it calls it, you know, improvement and modernization, but everything in the modernization is not in the new statute.
Correct.
So, you know, I'm curious what they're even thinking.
I think this was
adopted at the time that mandatory judicial education came in and this was early on, right? During the
merging
unification.
The mod fund was
during the
predation,
right?
Yeah, it was fine.
So I think the idea was that unification would be modern. not sure, but in any event, now we're at improvement and modernization fund. I think we have to look at this and say, okay, how are we going to year to year improve and modernize? I don't think the old modernization fund really even gives us any guidance because it was a different time.
Well, interesting when you look at this and see that we'll use education since you raised it. Education was a general fund account, and if you look at the mod fund definition, it basically says costs for them to participate, for judges and staff to participate or to support local trial court education programs. That definition is different than the model we use today. So first of all, maybe the educational component, the staffing issue was paid with general funds, and this may have originally been for the travel costs. Now, it's different.
Well, and I think that at the time, education changed. I mean,
it was delivered.
It was optional. I mean, I think most judges participated, but then it became required.
Which is almost a general fund requirement.
Right. And so I think all of these things in modernization are really not of any use to us in looking at the current IMF.
I agree.
So, Rebecca.
Well, I would ask the question, given that there's still a transfer of $38 million into this fund, and these were the priorities that were, I would almost ask the question, should that be one of the criteria?
Meaning, where was it before they merged?
Granting and funding coming from, and in the spirit of transparency back to the legislature, why would we spend it on something else other than what it was granted for? And I realize there's other funds that it's a mishmash now, but if we've identified it, don't we have some obligation to meet what it was intended for? Now, it may be that program needs to be stripped back down to if education now includes five things instead of three, you know, back to that the three primary things, but if education was given $2.8 million, that's probably what we should spend it on, if that was the intent of it. That's maybe oversimplifying it, but that would be my question to the group.
Kurt, and then Kim.
So I think ultimately, you know, at the same year that the funds were merged was also the year that the restrictions put in on the trial court trust fund. Remember that language that could...
CCNS before was not allowed to be spent
right.
out of the trial court.
That's right. It ended with that general language
about
restricting the trial court trust fund being restricted, that the council had to ensure that there was the benefits going to the courts.
And they needed to have consent, what's the word?
Consent
of its authority.
Authorization. So I think just based on the discussions, what was really going on was there was going to be a fund for what was trial courts and a fund that the judicial council would more directly make the allocations from. As Zlatko mentioned, not so much about what was in it at that time, that had to be sorted out. And because it is such a hodgepodge, I don't know, looking at the history, it sort of helps us get that. And what I think for you all is essentially now making recommendations to the council that the council should be doing with this fund over which they have the ability to expend from.
Right. Kim?
So I wanted to say that I remember when the Improvement Fund and the Modernization Fund were created back at the time when trial court funding was passed back in 98. It was one of the pieces of that piece of legislation of the omnibus bill. And I think that we do have to modernize our thinking if we're going to look at the Modernization Fund. Some things that seemed like a good idea back in 1998 maybe don't seem like such a good idea in 2016. And certainly our priorities as a branch have evolved in that time. Things that were emerging back in 1998, like ADR programs, are pretty embedded in our courts now, so maybe having a carve-out for, I see it up on the list there, for ADR programs, the numbers because it's too light, $1.2 million, maybe that doesn't make sense anymore.
They were new at the time.
They were new.
Yeah.
They were improvements. They were modernization efforts that are now sort of old news.
Right.
So,
Same thing with conflict litigation, which is an institution, right?
You kind of can't do without it. So it's not new. Let me circle back to one thing that Kurt raised, and it's been discussed generally, and then I'll come back to you, Zlatko. Excuse me for interrupting you. Is we can very easily say that we believe there are certain things. I know I said it once before, but I think we always have to keep it in the forefront of our minds that there are certain things that we believe that the general fund should take care of. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what judicial counsel would agree. So I think we just always have to be mindful of that our solutions may not necessarily be the overarching solution. I think we have to make our recommendations. And I think part of it circles back to something that Stephen said earlier, is we are prioritizing the things that we believe should be within the IMF fund. All of them may be there, but we may think that this group really should be shifted for judicial counsel to consider whether or not it should become part of the general fund. I just think we need to always be mindful that we can't just automatically say it and it happens. Go on.
Absolutely, the discussion has to be had. Just want to remind you, let's, from a technical standpoint, go to page 24. Again, it's the fund commission. And we talk about DIMF. Line 11, $38.7 million from the general fund. So it's not as if the general fund is not already supporting this. So in the discussion of moving it to the general fund, $38.7 million is already coming from the general fund. And another point to be made is if you look at line 13, we also take $13.4 million, and that goes to offset trial court budget cuts. So we already have, even though we're moving back this $20 million, we still have $13.4 continuing to go to the trial court trust fund to help with reductions. and there's a large amount of general funds still coming into the IMF.
So that's why.
So to just understand that context, though, when we say move to the general fund, in the back of our minds, there already is almost $40 million in the fund supporting these expenditures.
So that's why it brings our tap today, which is we have to look at these programs and go through and maybe prioritize. And
absolutely. I think that there's no general fund participation. Large part of the revenues into the fund are for the general fund.
So, I'm sorry, when you get to this,
$38 million coming in.
Are we really talking about the definitions of like what belongs, you know, in the, you know, if we could argue that it should be shifted because it should be in the general fund column, and it may affect how much general fund money comes into the IMF, but aren't we really just trying to define what truly belongs here, prioritize, so that if those kinds of shifts need to be made, we might be asking?
Yeah, the VCPs can get more general funds.
The best thing is that if you put them out there and they're not funded, then that program is not funded at all.
Yeah, I mean, and I thought about that as we were talking about having that conversation, right? Prioritizing and saying, well, these things are sort of a part of the structure, or the, you know, part of our institution, so why don't we fund them differently? Right, we might not get the money, but at the same time, it's got to make decide what we're doing. I mean, either we're going to do this or not do this,
right.
But I think we got to make a choice.
We just don't have enough money is the problem.
Right.
A lot of good things we do, we don't have enough money to do it all out of this fund.
And when we had better money, the reality is, and just like we do at home, when we have better money, we end up mixing up our pots. And it doesn't make that much difference until we don't have it, until it does. And now it does. Kim Turner?
So I mean, I think one of the places where we kind of are getting mixing ourselves up is that at the end of the day, we do have to cut significant dollars. We can't just shift the money from this pot to that pot. And we can't just put a Band-Aid on this solution by saying, oh, well, that should be in the general fund. So, okay, we've washed our hands of that IMF little problem. So these programs, I think we would all agree that they're all worthwhile programs, but they're going to have to rise and fall on their relative merits. Relative to everything else that's got to come out of those funds, some of them have relatively more merit, utility, serve more courts, whatever our criteria are, and those are the decision points that are going to have to drive our discussion, because it would be easy to say, we're just going to give Blotco a list of things that we wanted to find some other way to fund. Go get Blotco, go take care of that for us. That is not the charge. The charge is to look at these programs and say, I'm doing this one, it's up and down, it's going to be defunded or significantly reduced, because relative to all the other programs, it doesn't rise to the same level.
And that's where the survey helps to boost some of that dialogue. Yes, Sean?
And I agree with that, but I think a longer-term issue that we need to look at is what we've been discussing, and that is, are certain programs part of the core branch budget and should not be in the IMF? So we may go through today and say cut, keep, but the larger discussion is, you know, some of this branch-wide dialogue that we just have.
Why don't I propose we do this, unless sure you want to do something differently, of course, but why don't, it's lunchtime. I think we've got a good framework for where we are and where we need to go, and I suggest we fill up our blood sugar, get our blood sugar in its right spot again, and come back and just start with the list. And just, I think we know the issues. Let's just start with the itemization and have a dialogue from one all the way down. Let's do it.
So what time do you want us back? 30 minutes?
For those on the phone, what do we think, half an hour?
I'm just a matter of housekeeping. Since this is a public meeting, we did allow for public comment, and we did not receive any public comment.
Or written comment.
I just want to make sure we put that on the record.
What time are we coming back? 12:30?
Let's say 12:30. Yeah. So anybody on the phone can call back in at 12:30. Is that right, Blanco?
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you.